Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Even though he's not particularly big, his fastball plays, give me just an idea of what you've been told about him and what you know about him.
Yeah, so, like, it's funny. That's kind of, like, what's been said. The thing that I see is, like, skilled pitcher. And so when I see skilled pitcher and skilled thinker on the mound. So, like, adjustments are going to be fairly easy for him. Like, he will make adjustments, and he will see adjustments that he wants to make very quickly. And that's what I was excited about, because I think he kind of knows already, like, I'm going to have to do some things maybe a little differently. But he's open to it. He's aware of it. And he's so skilled, and he's been so successful. Players that are, like, as successful as he has been, that's kind of wired into you, I think, right? And when it's wired into you, it's like you've already made changes and you've already adjusted and you're good at it. And that's what's really encouraging about Shota.
That is from the Cubs convention. Our guy Boog Sciambi, along with Shota Imanaga, conversation from the manager Craig Counsell about the adjustments. And what's interesting is that what Craig knew then from their scouting, from their deep dive, from all their conversations as they were courting him and when they signed him, because that's just literally a day after they signed him, maybe the same day that the Shota Imanaga press conference was. Was at a different hotel across the street. And then here's Boog talking to Counsell. What has been playing out in spring training is exactly that. The pitching philosopher is what Shota Imanaga's nickname was in Japan. And already we've seen a tremendous amount of adjustments. I saw early on in camp, Shota gave up a bunch of homers on the high fastball, which was too low and too much in the zone. And he talked about it in certain ways and knew that he had to get that fastball higher. And then as spring went on, in a game against the A's, he struck out 9 in 4 1/3. It's about 10, 11 days ago, and the A's tried to make an adjustment, but then he went to the splitter, and they swung at every split-fingered fastball that he threw. So they started getting him there. And so Craig Counsell was talking about the stuff, and you don't have to do that much different. You don't have to be better. The stuff that he had there will work. But then on Wednesday in a minor league game, He had a different environment on a backfield, and he struck out 13 in 5 1/3. Yes, minor leaguers, but it's the quotes about it. If you watch Show to Pitch and the way that Craig Counsell was talking about it, he's one of these guys who, just like he was saying at the Cubs convention, can take input and be like, oh, okay, well, let me just get rid of that, and then I'll do this, and then I'll get rid of that, and then I'll do this, and then I'll add this, and then I'll adjust. And he's shown incredible ability to adjust. He's got a lot of different tools, man. He's got a lot of pitches, got a 5-pitch mix, gets good ride on that fastball. He's not going to be able to challenge with it in the strike zone as much as he did in Japan, gave up a lot of fly balls in Japan and some homers, a lot of them solos. He knows what he's doing in terms of when to challenge with that fastball. But my God, there's enough stuff there. And as the league adjusts to him and he's going to adjust back, it's going to be fun to watch him. I think he's going to be better than a 4. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be a solid middle-of-the-rotation guy. By the end of the year, you're going to get there and look at those numbers and think he's a solid middle-of-the-rotation guy with occasional flashes of top-of-the-rotation stuff. And at the price point, they got him. And for what they're building, I think it's going to end up being a fine, fine signing.
Speaks, it's important to note this guy struck out more guys than Yoshinobu Yamamoto did last year. Like,
yeah,
Imanaga led the league. Like, this is a guy that's going to miss bats. I really think the first couple months you might see Shota just tear into the league because people haven't seen his stuff, and he's going to look fun.
Yeah, and he knows what he's doing with all that stuff, and you're probably right, Sean. And then the league will adjust back, and then he'll have to adjust. And
right, but and we'll see what happens here. He's great at making those adjustments, so it'll be fun to watch him kind of counterbalance the league trying to adjust to him.
So Shota's in the rotation. We know that Steele is in the rotation. This is Hit and Run. Matt Spiegel with you here on 670 The Score. And we're going to talk to Herb Lawrence in about 20 minutes from CHGO. Been a long time since I've talked to Herb. I'm very much looking forward to that. But let's think about this rotation, shall we? And one of the things we got to think about is who's not in it. And I was a little worried that Drew Smyly was not going to be a willing bullpen participant because it's a guy who's been a starter his whole life. But then I see some of the quotes and I hear about it, and it makes all the sense in the world not to have 4 lefties in your opening day rotation as you wait for Jameson Taillon to get fully healthy. But it's more than that, because Smyly was very good out of the pen, kind of discovered something with him last year, and he is not upset about it. Listen to Drew Smyly talking about opening the year in the bullpen. Drew Smyly talking about opening the season in the bullpen. We will get to that when we can, because if you look at his numbers, they were far better in the pen than they were overall as a starter. And the truth is that as a starter, he usually got rocked in the first inning. So he was kind of trying to set a template for how he'd go about his starts, and it wasn't working. And then when he comes in out of the bullpen instead and is just kind of giving you the best stuff that he can, it ended up making a lot more sense for Drew Smyly from the bullpen perspective. Go ahead, Sean. Let's hear Drew talk.
I mean, it was a pretty short conversation, but I'm excited. You know, I'm excited for the opportunity to help the team. I think it's something I could be really good at, you know, something I could thrive in. And I think we're really deep this year. I think the bullpen is one of our strengths, to be honest. Last year, I feel like we kind of relied on 3-4 people, you know, most of the season, and there's a lot of wear down near the end. I think this year there's a lot of guys that can fill a lot of different roles, so I think we're really deep. I think it's something our team can really kind of build on. Pitching out of the bullpen is just a different mindset, you know. Like, I think you pitch differently, you feel different, you know, coming in later in the game. You attack guys different. Right now, my game plays better as a reliever. I don't think it's something where I'm sad I'm not starting. You know, like, I started 10 years in this league, and I don't think I'm closing the door on that. But I also think it's, like I said, I feel like this is an opportunity to go out, and I think working with Counsell, like, and that can provide a lot of value in the bullpen.
Man, that's cool. That's Drew Smyly understanding that not only is it a long career, and he's already started for 10 years, but right now his stuff plays better out of the bullpen. That he plays better out of the bullpen. That's good self-awareness, and it's not always the easiest thing to get to. That is for sure. Javier Assad is in this rotation, and he is one of those guys that every team needs. You can use him in any role at any time, and he seems to be the same guy and gets it done. I mean, look at the numbers last year. In 10 starts, it's an ERA of 3.02 and a whip of 1.23. Coming out of the bullpen, an ERA of 3.07 and a whip of 1.22. Stuff the same. Now, another guy who can pinpoint with control and uses a wide array of stuff to get his job done. He's smart, listens to coaching, malleable arm, super important piece for a winning team. And then there's Jordan Wicks, who, you know, was an absolute godsend in the rotation last year and has made the Cubs rotation, and he should in terms of opening day. And Jordan Wicks was talking about it and just how grateful he is to be in that starting rotation.
Craig called me in his office and told me, which was awesome. So it was, you know, big compliments to the staff and, you know, for putting a lot of trust in me. And, you know, it's something that I don't take lightly, and it's, you know, something that'll continue to fuel me. You know, I think it puts a lot of credit in, you know, the work we put in this offseason. Me and my trainer, you know, we did a lot of work this offseason. But, you know, it's not to be mistaken. This isn't the final goal. It's a step in the process. So, you know, while it is a big honor to be a part of a opening day roster, you know, it's something I don't take lightly. I know that the work's not done here. There's a lot of work to be done and long season ahead. For me, it's like, you know, enjoy it, but then, you know, move on and there's work to be done.
So that's Jordan Wicks talking about making the rotation. I talked about this last week in terms of Drew Thorpe, the young pitcher that the White Sox got as the centerpiece for Dylan Cease trade from San Diego, former Yankee. I'm a big fan of Drew Thorpe and the possibilities because he has an A++ changeup, like crazy swing and miss rates on the changeup. And when you have a great changeup or a great out pitch like that, that is confusing, it can make all the other stuff play up. Your other pitches are better because of that great changeup. And last year during a game that Jordan Wicks was pitching and was really impressive, Tom Verducci from Fox, wonderful baseball writer and now broadcaster, was talking about Jordan Wicks and made a very heady comp in terms of Jordan's changeup from the left side.
And Kevin, I think that changeup is so good. I don't think, you know, that with exposure, in other words, the more hitters see it, the more they'll be onto it. You know, it's a Johan Santana type changeup where you can sit on it, know it's coming, and it's just still hard to pick up. And it was, I think, even more impressive. The two strikeouts he got on called sinkers in the zone, when you could tell Pirates hitters at that point were sitting on his changeup and got fastball for strike three, just shows you his ability to command the strike zone with all of his pitches, but also his IQ.
See, there you go. That's it. Once your changeup is what Wicks's is, and it might even be as good as Johan Santana's, God, that's heady to think about, then you spot that fastball perfectly from the same tunnel and same exact look as the changeup, and man, that's pitching. Will they sometimes get you with that fastball? Yeah, if they're sitting on it, but then you go back to the change, right? Just bait and switch them, let alone with everything else that you have. Don't walk people. Spot that fastball low so it's tough to drive out of the ballpark and put them away with the change. I'm excited for the year that I think Jordan Wicks is going to have. 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Herb Lawrence in about 10 minutes. Let's take a couple of phone calls first, though. Larry, we'll get to you in a second. First, though, Michael in St. Louis, you are on The Score. You are on Hit and Run. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning, Spiegel. Good to be with you. Love the show. Glad it's back. I wanted to talk about Cincinnati this morning because talking about the Cubs rotation, but why not? What about their rotation? The top half of their lineup is obviously very formidable with Friedel and Freo.
Friedel's hurt, though. Friedel's hurt here for a while. Okay. They might be able to avoid the 60-day injured list with TJ Friedel, but nobody's exactly sure when he's going to come back. He had a real good breakout year last year, led off for most of the year, played center field, but he broke a bone in his wrist in spring training, and he's going to be out for a while. And I mentioned top of the show, Matt McClain with the shoulder injury. Might have to have surgery. They're trying to give that a minute. I know what that's like with the shoulder. Having dealt with the shoulder, the most complicated joint in the human body. It's freaking crazy, man. Anybody ever hurt your shoulder out there? I had an AC joint sprain. I hit my shoulder against a wall way too hard about a month ago. AC joint sprain and a rotator cuff sprain. And the amount of things that the shoulder does, the amount of testing that they need to do on the arm to figure out if your shoulder ligaments are working correctly is just crazy. So complex. I just, you know, I feel like I'm ready to operate on shoulders. I feel like, call me Dr. Matt Elatrache. Okay, go ahead and call me that. Look, in terms of the rotation, some big, big arms. Graham Ashcraft has a great arm. Hasn't really put it all together. Hunter Green obviously has a great arm. Surprised he's not the opening day starter. I like Andrew Abbott. Yeah, and Nick Lodolo if he's healthy. I mean, there's a lot of good arms over there and a lot of good young bats, but I just think they're too battered, man. Traded for Santiago Espinal from Toronto. Going to ask him to fill a big role in the middle of that infield while they wait for everybody else to get healthy. But I think it's going to be tough for the Reds, especially early. Let's go to Larry in Naperville on 670 The Score. Larry, good morning. You're on Hit and Run. How are you, sir?
Hey, Matt. How you doing? Well, right. Baseball season's here. I'm so glad that I've got through the torture of listening to The Scores bashing the White Sox for 4 months. It seems like the Cub radio broadcast has gotten through even to you.
What?
You know,
what do yeah, you?
I listen to your show. You don't defend them too much, buddy. You know,
I don't defend who? Who don't I defend? The White Sox or the broadcast?
You don't. You let Danny run you ragged on that. All right, let me move on.
Wait a minute. No, Larry. What do I let him run me ragged on? The White Sox or the broadcast or what?
No, you're good. I listen to you guys, but The Score in general is, I'm not alone. All my friends, they've never heard anything like this, the barrage against the White Sox all winter long, starting with David Haw. I mean, unbelievable.
Well, here's the thing, Larry. It's the organization, like, can you tell me definitively what people have been wrong about on The Score? Tell me what is good and is not getting enough respect from The Score's perspective. Go ahead, please.
I'll give you some answers. There's no question. I'm a season ticket holder for 26 years. I've been watching since the late 50s. Yes, it was a terrible year. Yes, but I'm listening to some of these callers, and even you've gotten through the narrative. Somehow the Sox got all the Kansas City Royals cast-offs. As far as I know, only one player is Nicky Lopez on the team. Okay, so let's get over the Kansas City Royals connection.
Well, Larry, the problem is that Chris Getz is from Kansas City and Pedro Grifol is from Kansas City, and there are way more. There's more than just Nicky Lopez. Hell, Brad Keller's in camp. He's the Royal who hit Tim Anderson after Tim flipped the bat in the Royals' direction. There are a lot of Royals, but I haven't mentioned them once yet today. But go ahead. Go ahead to the next.
All right, Let me say this. I go into this year. Does everybody think we're playing in the American League East? You realistically tell me if our first five guys line up, stay healthy, which is by far a big if, that any team in that division, I'll take our Sox first five better than any team in that division.
Wait. Pitchers or hitters?
I said hitters.
Okay.
I said hitters. Now, let me tell you something. You think Minnesota, Byron Buxton makes Eli Jimenez look like a picture of health. So they're counting on, you know, Minnesota, Detroit has two or three hitters. Kansas City has two or three hitters.
All right, Larry, I want to make this constructive. Don't tell me how bad or mediocre or hurt other teams are. Tell me what is good about the White Sox. Tell me about who are the top five hitters? Who are the top five hitters?
Well, there's no question. It's Louis Robert.
Great.
Would you say he's top five?
I'd say he's got a shot to be the best player in the division. Absolutely.
There you go. Okay. If Eli's healthy, where would you put him in the division?
I'd struggle to go top 10 in the division if Eloy is healthy because look at the numbers even when healthy. It has not been there. Everyone's waiting for the breakout full health year, and the full health hasn't happened. And even when he's been fully available, I mean, the OPS last year 758 in 120 games. 758 for a guy who can't run and doesn't play in the field. No way, Larry.
Name me 10 better hitters in the American League Central than Eli Jimenez.
I'll have it for you after the break. I'll have it for you after the break when I start the conversation with Herb Lawrence. That won't be as hard as you think, but go ahead.
I'm going to call back in July, and I will tell you right now, the Sox will be within 5 games of first place in July.
In July. Okay, Larry, we'll write that down. You haven't gotten through the top 5 hitters, though. Where are you after Eloy?
Of course. Wait a second. Everybody, again, oh, my God, Andrew Vaughn's not a good player. He's improved every year. If you look at his stats, 21 home runs, 80 RBIs, hit about, 260. He can do better. But don't tell me he's not a pretty good player. And by the way, Benintendi had a bad year. Yes, he did. If he comes to the normal baseball card, he's a pretty good player too.
And Andrew Vaughn's OBP and OPS were worse last year than they were the year before. The counting stats were up a little bit, but he played 18 more games. So he had 4 more homers and 4 more RBIs in 18 more games. I do not agree that he got better. I think Andrew Vaughn is a decent player and certainly a decent hitter, but he's also a top 5 pick, and that has colored the perception of him. And I got 10 hitters in the American League Central better than both Vaughn and Eloy, and I'll try to come up with it during the break. So those are your top 3. You got Moncada in your top 5?
Well, he's the 5th, but he's got to play.
Yeah.
One last point, real quick.
Yeah.
You know who we got rid of on this team? We got rid of a piece of crap hitter shortstop Anderson, the worst catcher in Sox history, who killed our pitching staff. We got rid of Aaron Bummer, couldn't throw a strike. Even Lopez couldn't throw a strike. We got rid of Lance Lynn giving up home runs while we turn our heads to get popcorn. We got rid of Lucas Giolito, who stinks. And the last one is a horrific Dylan Cease last year. So how much worse can we be?
Larry, thank you for the call. I love your passion. How much worse can we be? Let's add it to the list of Sox slogans. Losing cleaner, the more pleasant last place team. How much worse can we be? That's tremendous. I'll look up the list of hitters in the American League Central I think are better than Eloy Jimenez. We'll see if I can get to 10. Herb Lawrence from CHGO will amplify this conversation and talk about what he's looking forward to next on Hit and Run on the Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
No way. Too high.
He said me too high.
Too high.
Not too high. Too hard. Right?
First is really high.
Who gives a f***? It's gone.
On 670 The Score.
Play fast. What exactly does that mean?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because that's, you know, sometimes, we talk about, you know, playing fast. And, you know, I kid with Maldonado all the time. I say, well, you can't play fast. I mean, that's almost impossible. But, it doesn't mean it has nothing to do with speed. It has a lot to do with, attention to detail. There's an acronym that goes with it, you know, that our guys know about, that we tie everything into that. You know, I'm talking about strength and conditioning, sports performance, offense, defense, I mean, you name it. Everything's tied into this one word, and it's just simple reminders on, you know, on who we are, how we want to play the game, and how we want to go about our business.
That is Pedro Grifol on the acronym and on how he wants the White Sox to play. It has been far too long since either in person or on the radio I have spoken with the great Herb Lawrence. Herb Lawrence covers the White Sox for CHGO, co-host of the CHGO White Sox podcast, and an old teammate right here on the Score. And pleased to welcome in Herb to Hit and Run. He joins us now on the Circa Hotline. Guests join us there, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Herb, what's up, man? Good morning. How are you?
Spiegs, it's always good to be on. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. So, boy, we're all still reeling around here from our caller, Larry in Naperville, and his optimism and his anger at the Score's pessimism regarding the White Sox. Where are you as we sit here 4 days from opening day? Do you have some excitement? Do you have some good vibes? What's the mindset as we approach, Herb?
I am glad you asked me that, Speaker, because I, you know, of course, do a daily podcast every day. And so we're negative most of the time because the White Sox are not good. So the positive things I'm looking forward to are just the new blood they have there. They have a totally new starting rotation, which is not a good thing usually, but I'm looking forward to seeing some arms like Garrett Crochet's, that whole project. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing if Michael Soroka can recapture some of the stuff he had with the Atlanta Braves. And maybe they're going to turn Jordan Leisner into a premium closer, or they're going to do that with Michael Kopech. But there are storylines with the White Sox that are kind of intriguing for me. Now, ultimately, this team is going to be bad no matter what. But I am looking forward because, as Ed Lynch said, I think, hope springs eternal.
Yeah, man, this is the time. This is the time to feel it and let yourself kind of notice some of the stuff. And so you think Jordan Leisure, I saw this morning from Darryl Van Scowen, looks like Leisure has been informed he's going to make the team. So that's Leisure and Nastrini from the Dodgers. We'll see what happens at the back end of the rotation for Nastrini. But Leisure or Kopech? I think Michael Kopech has some natural closer stuff, and I've been expecting him there. Tell me why you think Leisure might work out there, Herb.
Just the 80-grade fastball that is just – devastating. And his whole spring training, I know taking spring training stats is kind of foolhardy, but 80 grade fastball is just unbelievable. Like, people haven't seen him yet. And I think he has the mentality that a closer needs. Now, Michael Kopech has the stuff a closer needs. I don't know if he has the mindset yet. You know, he got removed from the starting rotation because of his wildness. And, you know, the mental game for Michael Kopech has always kind of been a struggle where he kind of goes where how the outing's going. If it's going well, you'll see him be steely and good. But if it's going well or badly, you'll see him kind of react to that. You can't have that as a closer. You have to have a short memory and say, okay, good job hitting that ball hard. Next batter, the next time I'm going against you, you're going to strike out type of attitude. And I don't think Michael has that attitude yet. He can get there because that filth on that fastball and that slider are there. But I don't know if the mentality is there yet. I think Leisner has that type of buildup inside of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Like, I don't know. I don't know where Kopech's fit is if it's not that, you know, because it's not like you could trust him as your seventh inning or eighth inning or secondary leverage righty or that kind of thing if you end up not being able to trust him in the ninth. But then again, the ninth is different, of course. It's just it's so tricky to project exactly what Michael's spot is going to be because of that focus and the mentality that you're talking about. Talking to Herb Lawrence from CHGO. All right, let me run this list by you, Herb, okay? Because let's be honest about what Eloy Jimenez can be with a healthy season. The caller asked me to come up with 10 hitters in the American League Central that might be better than Eloy Jimenez because I blurted out 10. I don't think I'm at 10. I think I'm at 9. And I suppose you could argue with me. Luis Robert, we'll give the teammate one. Okay, Luis Robert, Jose Ramirez, Bobby Witt, right? No stoppers there so far?
Correct.
All right. Byron Buxton, Spencer Torkelson, Carlos Correa. Any stoppers there as better hitters than Eloy Jimenez, if healthy?
If healthy, Spencer Torkelson will be a better hitter, but I know he showed out in the second half last year, but his whole body of his career, I think Eloy might be slightly ahead of him, but that's, you know, nitpicking.
Okay, so we're at 6 there. I think Royce Lewis is going to have a monster year after a monster finish for Minnesota and a big showing in the postseason as well. I like Riley Green, whose numbers were better than Eloy's last year. Riley Green of Detroit, you know? So Royce Lewis, Riley Green, right there or above for you?
100%. I think Royce Lewis might be battling for the best player in the AL Central when we're done talking this year.
Damn. And then, I mean, Stephen Kwan doesn't have the power, but that dude hits. Maybe I like singles too much.
No, I if you're talking about all-around game, I would even put Yoan Moncada ahead of Eloy Jimenez as a hitter when healthy. I think he's definitely a better hitter than Eloy Jimenez.
Yeah.
Eloy was relatively healthy last year. He played over 100 games, and he really didn't have any production.
No.
So, I know that the potential and us looking forward to the 40-home run Eloy is there if healthy, and that's always his thing. But he was relatively healthy, and I think he hit 18 home runs last year. Now, the stance has changed. The hands are higher this year, so I'm expecting Eloy to be a better hitter when he's in the box so he can get to those high fastballs a little bit easier. But as anything, we need to have Eloy and Yoan and Luis Robert to be healthy, and those asterisks are always there. But Luis Robert kind of answered that last year with a healthy season. Now, if those other two can get together and become 150 games of pure health, man, the sky's the limit for both of them, especially Eloy Jimenez.
So listen to Herb talking about the changed stance in the hands of Eloy Jimenez here in spring training. What can you tell me about Yoan Moncada, who has had a good spring, looks pretty good? This is the final year of his deal. I believe it's $24 million is the number. And if he's not playing well midseason, I mean, it's a DFA candidate, but this is a final year for him to prove it. And what are the vibes you're getting from Yoan so far?
It seems like he's cool, relaxed. He looks like he came into camp last year. Remember last year he was doing the World Baseball Classic, and he was one of the best players at the World Baseball Classic, I think, on their all team as their representatives as the third baseman. Then he had a back problem when he came back to actual spring training last year, and then that kind of derailed his season where he went on the IL pretty quickly in that season. Now, if he can avoid that type of stuff where he didn't play the World Baseball Classic, he wasn't traveling to Japan and other countries and then coming back to the States, this season is his make-or-break season. I always think that a contract year always drives a person to get better, get in better shape, get the focus down for hitting. Pedro wants him to be a prototypical second hitter, which means bunting and stuff. I don't see that in Yoan's future. I hope he just is that guy that was in 2019 that was just seeing more pitches deeper. And then when pitches were in the zone, in his zone, he was murdering the ball. I think that guy can show up again. But like you said, if he doesn't, if he's the injured guy that's always kind of spotty, they're going to DFA him, because I think Chris Getz has shown you right now that there's no sacred cows. If you're in a position not performing or not doing what they want them to do, you're getting demoted. Like, you get Michael Kopech going from a starter to a reliever. You're not that guy anymore. Sorry, guy. You're out. And they have people that can replace Yoan Moncada probably next year with Brian Ramos. Or if Colston Montgomery can't stick at short, they'll put him at third base.
It's interesting. Herb Lawrence with us from CHGO. I am glad that they're turning the page on what they had tried to do, because it was time. I try to separate the disappointment of the way that window ended, but I admit it's difficult, and it's difficult to kind of find that optimism because of the way the window ended and how things fizzled. And then there's the part where I don't feel like they went outside the house and interviewed enough people, like anybody at all, frankly, before hiring Chris Getz. But all that said, and all that context there, in a bubble right now, this spring, are you hearing things from Chris Getz and seeing things from people like Josh Barfield and Brian Bannister that make you think that some smarter ideas and bigger concepts of player development are happening within the organization that could give you hope for the future, Herb?
Yes, I, like you, didn't like the insular hire of Chris Getz because he's part of the problem. He was 7 years as the minor league director here for the White Sox. And so I was initially the process of hiring him was flawed. the results might be good because of the hires he made, because you just spoke about it. Josh Barfield from the Arizona Diamondbacks in the same job that Chris Getz was, but you see the Diamondbacks churning out young talent after young talent after young talent. That's kind of the reason why we have Dominic Fletcher as our starting right fielder, because they have they don't have enough spots out there to fill out. And so Dominic Fletcher, a 26-year-old left-hander who's going to be playing right field, is a White Sox now. And the key star of this offseason, it's not Eric Fetty, it's not Soroka, it's not all those trades they made. It is Brian Bannister's pickup. I think that he's going to revolutionize the White Sox staff, both in the major leagues and in the minor leagues. Because you see the last couple of years of Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, they barely had starters in the minor leagues to take the ball. They had 1 year, they only had two actual major league starters or actual minor league starters going through their rotation. They were just doing bullpen games. Now you see these other pitchers coming in who have major league talent, and more than likely this is going to be the depth down there in AAA and AA, and Brian Bannister is going to be trying to have these reclamation projects like the Brad Kellers of the world to try to get them back to where they used to be in their glory days, even though Brad Keller only had like one or two good years. Brian Bannister, I think he's the director of pitching now for the White Sox, is hell-bent on doing the thing that Jerry likes to do, is finding inexpensive pitching and getting them give them premium talent or premium performance out of that. So I'm looking forward to what they're going to get from the pitchers that they have received this offseason, because pretty much everybody's gone except for Michael Kopech. They have a whole fresh new perspective on how to pitch. I don't even think he's usurping what Ethan Katz did, but these people are just in a different mind space, introducing new pitch shapes. And Sean Anderson, my co-host, always brings up these new terms that Brian Bannister champions. And I'm like, oh my God, at least these memes or these new concepts are kind of foreign to me. That's good, because I've been hearing the same old garbage from White Sox people for years. So it's good to get a fresh perspective on the talent you got, and that talent saying, oh, that guy saying, hey, this talent you do have, not good enough. I'm going to bring in my own talent and see what they can do with my tutelage.
Yeah, you know, it's good stuff, Herb, because like if we're looking for optimism, if we're looking for, you know, an eventual turn of the big bus, it's going to happen with concepts like that. It's going to happen with new ideas from the outside. And if Getz is insular, at least Bannister and Barfield are from the outside. I've heard nothing but good things about Bannister and his theories and his practices for years from multiple organizations. Got to get him on this show and expound on zooming out to look at the big picture. Herb Lawrence,
you're gonna geek out in there.
Yeah, man, right? I gotta get in on that and allow myself to look beyond the field. Because frankly, this is a year where, you know, and we've lived this. We've lived this with the early years of the last Sox build, and we lived it with the early years of the Cubs and Theo build. It's bigger than our time on the couch. It's bigger than that. What they're trying to do is just hard to divorce it when the other negatives of the context are there. Herb, I usually do this at the beginning of interviews, and I forgot to this time. Let's do baseball bona fides. I've never done it with you, okay? So I'm looking forward to this. Who is one of your most favorite players in the game, in the past or in the present, whoever comes to mind, and tell me why?
My favorite player of all time is Robin Ventura. And I know White Sox fans cringe when they hear that name, and it's kind of that bad thing where coaching at the end of his career kind of soured White Sox fans or other fans, and that they think about Robin Ventura as the White Sox manager who failed instead of the third baseman who won 5 gold gloves, who hit 18 grand slams in his career. I think he's fifth all time. And if you look at the list, all the home run, all the grand slam hitters are pretty much the home run hitters that you think about. A-Rod, I think Gehrig's up there, Frank Robinson, and then it's Robin Ventura, because he was just clutch. I mean, he hit the most clutch home run in the playoffs. It's called the grand slam single. Not one of the most. I'm not going to say the most, but
yes, sir.
The grand slam single is one of the most famous home runs in playoff history. He also is just a cut-up. If you've ever seen him during rain delays when he was impersonating his teammate at the Mets, Mike Piazza, just that kind of cut-up attitude. And also he was a great player on both offense and defense, hit two grand slams in one game, I believe. Or no, hit a grand slam in the 10-8 victory against the Texas Rangers. I think he hit off a Goose Gossage. And just like those type of memories keep on flooding my mind. I think about Ron Ventura that way instead of the manager who everybody else thinks about, or the infamous Nolan Ryan thing, where I think most of the people, when you bring up the name, it's like, ugh, that guy who got beat up by a 48-year-old? Yeah, that guy.
No, that's a tremendous career for Ventura. Love it. All right, I want to squeeze in these last two. What's the best game you ever had a chance to see in person? Best game you ever had a chance to see in person, Herb Lawrence?
I was at the David Bodie walk-off Grand Slam versus the Washington Nationals.
Hell yeah.
It was just, it's the ultimate scenario when you're a kid. 3-2, you're down by three, you hit a Grand Slam to win the game and walk it off. Like, what better can you be? I'm not even a Cub fan. I was kind of happy that I was at that game. And I was also at the Chris Morel game last year versus the White Sox.
Oh, not yes. Yeah, not man. Because it's your White Sox, but that Morel game, the madness of that finish, it's it doesn't make my top five. I'm spoiled with my top five, but it's top 10 for sure. That was a thing. And then what's one thing you would change if you were commissioner, Herb Lawrence?
One thing I would change is that, that's a really good one. I would outlaw sacrifice bunts.
Just get rid of them altogether. Kill them all.
Like you can't. Like you don't. Like in 16 inch softball, you can't bunt.
You can't
like,
bunt.
I don't understand bunting for giving yourself outs instead of trying to hit this pitcher. Like I just don't understand that.
I get it.
Perplexes the mind.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to come to the big CHGO Odyssey Tilt this year in the Media Softball League, and I will watch you not bunt, Herb. I will cheer when you don't bunt, all right?
Oh, and then that's what I'm going to watch this year for the 162 games where Pedro wants to bunt all the damn time.
I know, man. Good luck. Good luck. Herb Lawrence, this was fun. We'll do it again. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, you got it. It's Herb Lawrence from CHGO. The man would outlaw the bunt. Tough year to be a Sox fan. Big picture White Sox. Before we get to the Ohtani story at the top of the hour, it's another hour and more of Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Man, it's nice to be back. Callers, texters, thank you for the warm welcome. Listeners, hope your Sunday is going well. 39 degrees downtown Chicago, wondering if it will be warm enough still in an hour that me and my son can go out to the park, play a little soccer, maybe play a little catch. Remind me to tell you later about the poor decision I made regarding catch, but I think I can adjust it today. We'll see. We'll see if there's any going back.
Well, that's a tease.
Yeah, right? But anyway, we've got a huge story in baseball. It's the biggest story in sports. Even as the NCAA tournament wages on, and even though the Bears are on the clock, it actually is a bigger story, believe it or not. It is the gambling scandal surrounding the interpreter for Shohei Ohtani. There was a development late Friday. There are details about some of the players that have now come out that I want to get into, and I want to talk about it with you. Phone lines are open. If you've got thoughts on the Ohtani scandal, the gambling scandal, or really anything Cubs and Sox that you've been dying to get in and haven't had a chance to get in, this is your moment. This is your time to talk to me, Matt Spiegel, here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. The phone number is 312-644-6767. We talk some Ohtani, continue the Cubs and Sox conversation. Jack McMullen from Just Baseball comes up at 11:25 as well. Keep it right here on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.